Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hey, you! Don't listen to that. Listen to this. This is a heavy, heavy Doom Patrol sound. The doomiest sound around. So if you're coming off Danny the Street and you're beginning to feel the heat, well, listen, Buster, you better start to move your magnetic feet to the rockin'est rock-steady beat of Doom Patrol. Waiting for Doom! Hi everyone, I'm Mike. Welcome to Waiting for Doom.
And I can't follow that. I'm Paul, and you can find me on reading_Hicks on Twitter. And you can send us emails at waitingfordoom@gmail.com if you want to catch up with sort of a website about our stuff. We've got mygreatestadventure.80.blogspot.com, where Doug Zavisha runs a site where we tap in and he plugs our show for us, and you can use our message boards and things like that. And all our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Podbean.com. You've really buggered up the intro, Mike.
Look, it's been a while. You know, I'm excited to be back on the air. You know, it's great to be back. Yes, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at AvantGarve. You can also find on Twitter our sentient show account, Wilfred, who is at WFDPod. And as always, we are brought to you proudly by Comicosity.com, which is a great site for all things comics related, news, reviews, previews, and lots of comic book love. So go and check them out.
Yeah, I was just reading the Christopher Priest interview. He's taken over Deathstroke, and he is a black man. Mm-hmm. And apparently DC contacted him and said, "Do you want to write Cyborg?" And he was like, "I'd like to write someone who's not black." And they were like, oh,
wow.
Deathstroke? And he went, "Sure."
Cool.
So that's an interesting story, and I haven't read the first issue of Deathstroke, but I've heard very good things about it, and I am intrigued.
Cool.
And Christopher Priest, honestly, he is a draw card for me. I've always respected what he's done, and he's a good writer.
I've heard the name a lot, and I've heard nothing but good things about him, but I have to be honest, I can't recall if I read anything of his, so school me in the works of Christopher Priest.
Oh, he did, back in the day, he did The Ray. He was called James Owsley, and he changed his name to Christopher Priest at some point.
Right.
He did a series called Zero with an X instead of a Z.
Oh, okay, I remember that, yes.
Or a Z if you're American. He did Steel. He did a lot of work on Steel.
Right.
Yeah. So, and Black Panther is probably his most famous.
Right.
Quantum and Woody. Quantum and Woody. He did a lot of hilarious stuff in Quantum and Woody.
Okay.
Yeah. So I've always liked his stuff.
Cool. Yeah.
Haven't bought all of it, but always, you know, he is a name that attracts me. You need something like that for Deathstroke, let's be honest.
Yeah. Right.
Anyway. So that was a very interesting interview. Go and read it. And there's other things on, you know, you can talk. There's Scott Snyder. He's talking about some Batman thing he's doing.
Oh, right. That old shtick.
Yeah.
Snyder and Batman again. Been there, done that.
Yeah. Anyway, Mike, how was your week in comics?
Well, I've actually made some progress on the comic pile. Not a whole heap, but things like King's Quest from Dynamite Comics. That's actually taken a really interesting turn. They're back on the planet Mongo, but things are very different now, so that was exciting. Detective Comics, I'm loving that. That's good fun. Black Science was back. I really enjoyed the Justice League Rebirth book and the first issue of that was a good fun. The Fix from Image Comics by Nick Spencer about corrupt cops. It's hilariously wrong. Other than that, the only sort of pop culture related thing that's going on, is probably the worst kept secret in Brisbane, in that next week they will be filming scenes for Thor in our city. And they're blocking off certain streets right in the city centre. I found out about it, I think it was Tuesday morning. My brother works in a building on one of those streets and sent me the information that they had received in their building, along with all the other tenants on those blocks. So, and sure enough, not through anything done on my part, but news quickly spread throughout certain circles in the city. So at least two of the comic stores, well, the comic store I go to, Secret Identity Comics on Charlotte Street, they're aware of it, and they're sort of just around the corner from where they'll be doing a bit of the filming. Ace Comics and Games in the city, they put something up on their site and on their Facebook page as well. So yeah, it hasn't taken very long for the news to spread. So, they also sent an all-staff email out at my work, because I work not far from where they'll be filming as well, about the fact that there will be disruptions to traffic and, you know, certain streets will be blocked off at certain times. They didn't mention what for, other than something was being filmed, but it's really the worst kept secret in Brisbane. What for?
Wow.
What for? Yes, Thor Ragnarok, yay. So that'll be interesting to see how worse the situation gets with the streets being blocked off to begin with, and then to see how many onlookers they will have as well, trying to get a shot of certain actors that may or may not be there. So that'll be fun. That'll be fun getting to work that week.
Yeah. Well, that's exciting. So I presume Brisbane is doubling for Planet Hulk. Is that what you think?
That wouldn't surprise me where they're shooting. Maybe a fancier part of Planet Hulk, maybe. Who knows? I don't know what really they're doing with the storyline.
The banking district of Planet Hulk, for instance.
Could be, yeah. The
I obviously know more about the film than you do. I believe they're merging the Planet Hulk stuff, so.
Yeah, I knew that, but I don't know exactly what happens in the story other than heroes fighting or some shit. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what I'm hoping I can get some sneaky photos at that time, but we'll see what happens. Anyway, what's been happening in your world, Paul?
Not a lot. Reading some old comics, reading... I've got all this stuff I want to read, and I keep grabbing something else instead. It's really weird.
You're spoilt for choice.
I'm overwhelmed by choice, you know. I'm paralyzed by options. But so the other day I grabbed some Warren Ellis Stormwatch. Got all the trades of that, and I haven't read them for a long, 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 long time. And they are so 90s. The art is really poserific. But the story is very Warren Ellis. He can do it when he wants to. It's so quite enjoyable. So I wonder how far I'll go with that. I might read all four trades and then, or five trades, and then start Authority or something like that. But we'll see. Okay. There's heaps of other things to read. I should be reading. But anyway, we probably ought to go down on Darrington Way now.
Let's do it.
Now, it's been a couple of weeks, and we started getting tweets from people about a little pamphlet that DC produced called DC Young Animal, and it's sort of probably technically an ash can, because it is a half-size comic, and it is done to emulate the Who's Who, or the classic 80s Who's Who from DC Comics, and it's in black and white, and I have one in my hand.
Oh, you lucky, lucky man.
Yeah. I know who my parents are. Anyway, this is a little promo thing for Young Animal. So it has inside, it has a bit of promo stuff for Shade the Changing Girl, and Cave Carson has the cybernetic eye, and Mother Panic, and Doom Patrol.
Hooray!
Hey!
This pleases Wilfred.
So, we get a few Who's Who pages, and there's one for Doom Patrol, and it is for Space Case, and it has Casey Brink, the EMT, the emergency medical technician. So let's use the correct terminology. And so there's a little bit of background there. So her first appearance will be in Doom Patrol Volume 6, Issue 1.
Mm-hmm.
Looking forward to that. And it doesn't say too much about her, except she has sort of weird dreams and sort of a tenuous hold on reality. And she can drive really fast. It's got powers and weapons. Casey drives fast. Casey drives efficiently. Casey drives so fast, she'll always get you there early. You'll never be late with Casey behind the wheel of absolutely anything. Her weapon of choice is her cheerful demeanor and an experimental compound known as the dreaded psycho gas.
I guess that would explain the mask she's been shown wearing with the little nozzle thing at the front, if she's
possibly
inhaling stuff.
Yes, and it does say that both her parents are deceased, and her dad was possibly a superhero because he was called Science Dad, aka Torminox 2.
Okay.
So there's stuff to be intrigued by there, and it's got a few pages of Doom Patrol art for us to look at, a couple of pages with no word balloons, so we don't know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but there's some nice Cliff Steele stuff. Little creator profiles. It's a very cool little thing.
Nice, nice. Have the previews for any of the other Young Animal titles enticed or intrigued you enough to check them out?
Cape Carson's Cybernetic Eye has my eye.
Uh-huh.
yeah, definitely. I mean, I like the look and feel of that. I like the art. Michael Avon Oeming is the artist on that.
So. Oh, I know his work from Powers.
Yeah, Powers.
Very cool stuff, yes.
Yeah, and John Workman is doing the letters for Mother Panic. Little Johnny Workman, he's still working.
It's a workhorse, that Workman.
Yeah. Anyway, so this is exciting. And Todd Klein is the letter for Doom Patrol, the famous Todd Klein.
Oh, cool. Mm-hmm. Old school patrol creators there.
The funny thing is they've got the creator profiles at the back and everyone is kind of young and cool looking, and then you've got these really old letterer guys. So these veterans of lettering from over the years. So if you go to a comic shop, you might be able to get one of these. So I was lucky to get the last one at my comic shop.
Very lucky.
Cool. I rang them on the day when they only had two left, and they put one aside for me.
Oh, God bless them. Give them a shout out, Paul. What's your comic store called?
Dee's Books and Comics in Belconnen in Canberra.
Nice.
I love Dee. You can walk in. You could not go in there for 20 years, and she would still remember your name when you walk in.
But that's handy when it comes to the comic world, you know, for old stories and customers, I guess.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's probably it for going down on Darrington Way. Do I hear ticking?
Yes, that can only be the unmistakable ticking of the Doom Clock. Okay, looking at the face of the mighty Doom Clock, we can see that the last Doom Patrol book we had in our hands was issue 22 of volume 5 from the Giffen Clark run. That was cover dated July 2011 and went on sale May 4th of that same year. So it has been 5 years and 15 weeks since the last Doom Patrol book. But volume 6, issue 1 is a mere 4 weeks away.
That's less than a month, Mike.
Less than a month.
Less than a month.
September 14, it'll be on the shelves, in our hands, and in our hearts.
Should we renumber the show?
You mean like Waiting for Doom Rebirth?
Yeah.
Sure.
We could call it Living with Doom.
Living with Doom, yeah. No, I think our brand is strong enough, you know, because we're still technically waiting each month for the next issues to come out. And not to cast, you know, any doubt or negativity towards it, but, you know, let's wait and see how long it lasts, because the last couple of series only made it into like the low 20s.
Yeah, true.
So, you know, I'm hoping they break that barrier. I hope it has a long and healthy and successful run. Well, of course I want that, you know. I think all Doom Patrol fans want that. So, you know, I think we'll stay on brand. I think we'll
be fine. All right. Okay. We'll do it your way.
Oh, wow. Sure, let's. The last appearance of the team was 53 weeks, a year and a week ago, we saw them in All-Star Section 8, number 3, and Justice League United, number 12. And this week in Doom Patrol history, going on sale for a mere 75 cents on August 18th, 1987, and cover dated November 1987, was issue 2 of Doom Patrol Volume 2 from Paul Kupperberg and Steve Lytle. And
wow.
This was when the team was still sort of getting their act together, because half of them had been captured by the evil Kalki, who was, you know, big surprise, wanted to destroy the world like all the big bad guys do. And we had, you know, saw a bit of his background and his origin story, and there was lots of fighting and explosions and stuff. And it was pretty cool. We covered this all the way back in episode 26 of our show. So if you want to learn more about that issue, go and check that episode out. And that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
Who here likes comic books? Who likes superheroes? Who likes superhero comic books? From the 90s! That's what I thought. Hey there, I'm Nathaniel Wayne from the Council of Geeks, and though I've always loved superheroes, the only time I was buying monthly issues was during the much maligned 1990s. I've decided to go through my personal collection, issue by issue, and in my own little way, try to answer the question, were 90s comics really that bad? Chances are the answer will be yes, but I think these books deserve another chance, and they're gonna get it. On 90s Comics Retrial, part of the Council of Geeks podcast, available on iTunes and at 90scomicsretrial.wordpress.com.
So, very exciting today on Doom Explaining. We're going to look at Doom Patrol number 1, but it's from Volume 3. So this is after the Vertigo volume of Doom Patrol ended. So we've had Paul Kupperberg started Volume 2, and then Grant Morrison took it over, and Rachel Pollack finished it off. And then there was a few years off, so about 7 years, I think.
About that. Let's say 7 years. I think that's a good call,
Yep. And in 2001, the Doom Patrol returned with Volume 3 and two new creators who had never worked on Doom Patrol before. So, Mike, take us through Issue 1 of Volume 3.
Issue 1, cover date of December 2001, going on sale October 3rd of that year for $2.50. It was edited by Andrew Helfer. John R. Cootie was our new writer. Tan Eng Huat was the new artist. Letters were by Bob Lappin, and David Stewart was the colorist. And I love the cover of this issue. It's so very Cliff. He's looking very concerned, and he has a thought bubble saying, "We're doomed." And in his dome, you see the reflection of the new Doom Patrol members.
Yeah.
He is 4/5 new, all different Doom Patrol.
He looks so weary, doesn't he?
He does. He's just concerned and weary and worn out, and oh, I love it. So we open the issue, and it begins with a uniformed team leaping into action in a wintry scene. We have two men and two women running towards a plane that's crashed in a lake. And as they race to save those aboard the plane, we see they have strange abilities. There's a woman named Shailene who heats the water to stop the survivors from freezing. The other woman named Ava unleashes bizarre dark tendrils from her fingertips, and she manages to use them to lift the plane up out of the water. There's a red-headed man issuing orders to his teammates, and he seems to know what they're about to do before they actually do it, but only after his head shakes in this bizarre blur. And the final team member is a soft-spoken, long-haired dude. He activates some sort of force field around his body, but he clearly doesn't have full control over it as he suddenly slips and falls on his ass on the ice. Poor guy. Suddenly things start to get worse for this rescue mission as the force field dude continues to slide away on the ice. And Ava's tendrils actually snap the plane open instead of dragging it to dry land. And Charlene cries out to the red-headed man, "Ted, I've made the water too hot." And we see clouds of steam rising up, and they part to reveal she's actually boiling the survivors from the plane crash.
So,
not too good there. Ted loses his temper. He's berating the team, telling them that they stink and they couldn't save a cat in a tree nor food stamps. And he storms off. That's some wicked burns there, Ted. He storms off, he sits down in the snow, and he lights a cigarette. And while all this has been going on, there's been a dark-haired man in a business suit who's been watching over all these events from the shoreline. He looks over at Ted and he does a face palm. Poor guy. We then cut away to see a familiar-looking robotic man. He's turning the wheel of a steam pipe valve, and he's reminiscing of a life that feels like it happened 10,000 years ago, when his hands were on a different type of wheel. Two of his co-workers appear and comment on how he's able to do things like work in a 120-degree boiler room and maintain a sulfur recovery system that would kill the two of them, but it doesn't affect him at all. And we cut away again to see the dark-haired businessman again, this time walking through offices, and he's arguing with an underling about a cover story on the costume team that was due to appear in a magazine called News Time, a story that was to coincide with the team's debut, but after the botched rescue mission, he demands that the story be pulled, despite the issue being ready for print, and it's live on the News Time website. He seems unconcerned about the costume personally, and he thinks something will come up. It always does. He's fairly confident despite, causing a bit of havoc there. This time we cut away to see Cliff Steele, aka Robot Man, who we saw earlier in the factory. He's about to leave his run-down looking apartment building, but not before he's harassed by his slimy-looking landlord for overdue rent. Cliff promises him he gets paid in 4 days, that'll cover everything he owes. And then he heads out into the street and where he's grumbling about the ice-covered streets and why don't they salt them anymore. And Cliff makes his way to a bus stop, and he politely asks some people whether the 4B bus stop's there, when suddenly a car comes careening out of control and heads straight towards a crowd. Cliff leaps into action, grabbing the car as it slams into him, and he brings the car to a stop. The entire city block has stopped in stunned silence to watch this, and before they suddenly crowd around Cliff to thank him for saving them. And elsewhere, the dark-haired businessman sees a news article on the web with the headline, "Former member of Doom Patrol resurfaces, plays hero once again." And he thinks, see, something does come up. Yes. Before long, this dark-haired man has tracked down Cliff at his work, and he introduces himself as Thaya Jost, someone that Cliff admits he's never heard of, but Thaya says he's definitely heard of Cliff, and he recounts Robot Man's history as a former race car driver known as Cliff Steele, and then his time as a member of Niles Calder's original Doom Patrol. And Thayer explains he has a team, a special abilities task force, but they lack the experience that Cliff has. Cliff refuses, saying those days are over for him. He doesn't want to do things like fight time monsters in a dimension of nothingness anymore. Sounds like he had more than enough of what Morrison and Pollack put him through. Thayer explains this will be different. It'll all be different. His team will help protect the normal people, while teams like the JLA fight the weird stuff. Oh, and Thaya can offer Cliff a lot of money for the job. So, yeah, that's a bit of an incentive there. Later on, the costume team we saw at the start of the issue are waiting for Joss to arrive for a meeting in a large hall room. And Ted comments that he's going to quit as soon as Joss walks through the door. He's had enough. He doesn't like what's happening with this team. But just as their boss does arrive, he introduces Cliff as the new team task force commander, and Ted gets fired up at this, saying he's already the team captain, what's going on? But Joss placates him and with the news that Cliff, he's only there in an advisory capacity. Right, I'm sure that's going to last long. We then meet the rest of the team properly. We meet Shailene Leia, who's aka Fever, she's the woman with the heat powers. Vic Darge, also known as Kid Slick, he created the force field and fell over so successfully. Ava, the girl with the tendrils, is known as Freak. And Ted Bruder, the rather argumentative redhead man, he's also known as Fast Forward. As Cliff and Joss sort of step away from the team for a minute, they quietly argue about the fact that they never discussed him being there in an advisory capacity. And Thayer says, look, he'll break the truth to a slightly sensitive Ted later on, as keeping the team together is his priority. And then he leans over and taps a button on the wall, and the group is suddenly back at the airplane crash on the Wintry Lake that we saw at the start of the issue. And Joss remarks, look, it's our Holo Crisis Simulation Training Center. Nice, huh? He seems very proud of his invention. Thayer leaves them to practice, and Cliff begins looking over the dossier he has on the team, and we learn that Ted can see into the future. When his head does that weird blur thing, Vic can eliminate friction around his body with the field he creates, and Shailene can raise the temperature of something with her touch. Oddly enough, there's nothing really detailed on Ava's powers other than, you know, seeing these bizarre black tendrils come shooting out of her hand. During all this sort of getting to know each other exercise, Cliff gets a feisty Ted to switch off the holo program so he can concentrate on examining the group's powers as he uses them and give them a bit of a quick training session. But he and Ted are arguing over the fact whether this robot man can actually teach him anything. And the issue ends with Thayer and Cliff in Thayer's office, and Cliff signing a contract for what is apparently a whole lot of money. And Thayer remarks that he's really happy that Cliff is on board. It's great to have him there. And the contract is worth every penny because it's not just a salary for Cliff, but it's also renting the long-term and universal license on the trademark Doom Patrol.
Dun, dun, dun.
I really like this first issue. It's very straight to the point. There's a bit of mystery about what's going on with Cliff's life, and we're sort of straight into meeting the new team members.
Yeah, it couldn't be more different to previous versions, could it?
Exactly.
Ted Bruder, the cranky bloke, he reminds me of Earl from My Name is Earl.
Oh.
It's like Jason Lee.
That's a very good call, actually, yeah.
Yeah, because he's so, you know, laconic and cranky, and he's really trailer park as well.
Yeah, it's. I do think it's interesting that they decided to go with essentially a teen book this time around, because they're all... I wouldn't put any of them over, say, maybe Ted, I'm guessing probably the oldest of this new team, probably in his early 20s. Yeah. I'd say the rest were sort of all in their late teens. And maybe yeah. Shailene's the youngest. And the thing that I realized about Shailene when I was reading this, she's the new Hot Hands.
Yeah, she's the female Scott Fisher.
So it's a nice bit of legacy work there. But yeah, I think this is a really great, fun issue. It's straight to the point. The art's really cool and a bit different as well from what we're used to. It's a little bit more...
It's very stylistic. It's not photo realistic at all.
Mm.
You know, the angles and perspectives are always, you know, hyper-exaggerated, and, you know, there's a funky thing with smoke all the way through the issue. And Cliff is so expressive.
Yes. It makes a very nice change.
Really cartoony looking face, and you know, his eyes are changing size all the time.
I really love the last page where the team are all sort of posing there, and he's, you know, flexing his muscle and got this kind of cool but serious look on his face and puffing his chest up. Yeah, it's a great look for him, and the team look great there as well, other than Ted saying, you know, this uniform stinks.
Yeah. And flipping through, I noticed the freaking Smallville ad that keeps surprising me every time I see it.
Yeah, I forgot there are a lot of ads in this issue. I don't know what DC were doing at the time, but you know, definitely, it's like it's essentially a centerfold of Tom Welling in the cornfield.
Tied to a fence.
Yeah.
That's, with his shirt off and a lipstick S on his chest or something.
That's not creepy at all. But yeah, it's
good on him.
Good on Smallville. Yes, yeah. It's you know, a 40-page comic, but you know, there's only 22 pages of story, so it's kind of That's one thing that kind of bothered me a bit. I guess because I don't notice ads as much in present day comics, whereas these older ones, there's things for, you know, there was a lot of anti-smoking and anti-marijuana ads in these things.
And pro-milk.
Yes, pro-milk and a couple of things for computer games and, you know, Magic the Gathering. And I kind of, you know, you don't really see a lot of that these days. Well, not that I've noticed. I could just be skipping right past them. But, yeah, just an interesting thing to recall from back in those times, which was only, 15 years ago? God.
Well, it still seems like, looking through this comic, it doesn't seem that old to me.
Mm.
That's just a product of being a really old bastard.
Right. Anyway, Paul, take us on to issue number two.
So issue number two, it came out in January 2002, according to the cover, but in real, actual life, it came out November 7, 2001. And it cover price $250, so pretty pricey comic back then. Andy Helfer is the editor. He's a very famous editor at DC at the time, group editor, not just a single editor. He edited a whole group. Can't tell you what else he edited at the time, but I didn't look that up. Written by John Arcudi again, artist Tannen Hewitt, letterer Bob Lappin, and colorist Dave Stewart. So same team as issue one. That's a good sign. Anyway, so issue opens. We see some black-garbed, heavily armed soldiers in the jungle about to go all Rennie Harlan on their targets when there's a sudden explosion. Boom! And it rocks the soldiers, and they realize they're not the hunters, they're the hunted. And caption boxes name this as the island of Lausanne, or Lausanne, anyway. And there is another rebel uprising, and this is bad for tourism. And these are the rebels, these soldiers. And they emerge from the jungle and face a lone figure, a long hair, t-shirt, cargo pants. He says, hey. And the leader panics and orders them to open fire. And a frictionless aura appears around, and it's Vic Darge from the first issue. And he says softly, oh man, why do you want to go and do that? And then Ava's tendrils erupt from behind Vic and they seize the soldiers. And in the splash page that follows, we see the story titled The Wrong Way to Do Right. And the soldiers who aren't ensnared by Ava run in retreat. And one is startled to run straight into Ted Bruder, who's there having a cigarette. And he shakes his head in the way like Scooby-Doo seeing something. And he predicts the soldier is going to pull out a knife from his boot to stab him. And Ted says, you ain't the only one who's been through boot camp. And then he drops the soldier as he reaches for his boot. Another soldier lines up to shoot Ted, but his ammo cartridge suddenly explodes because Shailene has used her powers from a distance to heat him up. Ooh. So hot hands from a distance. Cliff Steele, robot man, emerges from the jungle, advising, encouraging, and in the case of Ted, criticizing, look, I won't tolerate a lax attitude. People get killed that way. Ted retorts, you know, maybe you should get some ears put on that thing. I just got done telling you I knew Shailene was going to take that boy out. I seen it when I popped into the future. I can do that, member. And Ted reminds Cliff that he, Ted, is the team leader. And Ted continues to complain as the team gather to confirm the American hostages are safe. Anyway, back in the States at Jost Enterprises headquarters, Cliff is having second thoughts about doing the press conference. And Thayer Jost is handing out Doom Patrol branded baseball caps. And Cliff is reluctant. It looked like we're announcing we signed a record deal. And then Ted walks past in his cowboy hat. And he mentions that caps being worn is a team captain decision, as he adjusts his cowboy hat. Cliff says to Josh, when are you going to tell him? And Josh says, soon, don't worry, soon.
Sure.
Anyway, at the press conference, Josh details the rescue and praises the team, all wearing caps except for Ted, and introducing them in turns. So Cliff Steele, a.k.a. Robot Man, and Shailene Lau, a.k.a. Fever, Ted Bruder, a.k.a. Fast Forward, Vic Darge, a.k.a. Kid Slick, and the ever-silent Ava, known as Freak. So AKA stands for also known as, which I never knew as a kid. I used to see it all the time and I never knew what it stood for. So I'm chucking that in case people don't know that.
Right. Very helpful of you, Paul.
Thank you. Anyway, he encourages the press to visit the Doom Patrol website to learn more about Freak because he's not going to tell them about it. And afterwards, the team chat about the press conference and Cliff was surprised by the mention of the news site. But Ted is cynically accurate. News site? That's a commercial site, you idiot. What do you think them ball caps is all about? And so they're selling things with Doom Patrol on them. And then Ted goes on a rant about how annoying the reporters were, how dumb the public are, how stupid their questions were, till Shailene can't take it anymore. And she says, don't you ever say anything nice? And soft-spoken Vic adds, yeah, why you always got to be so negative, man? And Cliff perks up, negative, man? And then he realizes there's officially another negative man on the Doom Patrol. And Ted says, wait, what? I don't get it. And the team will snicker. Anyway, another day, another mission. So we're like 10 pages into this comic and there's two missions, which is more than they could fit in an entire Suicide Squad movie. Anyway.
Ooh, geez.
Anyway, this time in Sarkhan, as a typhoon threatens a convoy of military vehicles as they struggle across a low bridge through the water. On board the Doom Patrol escorting people to the airport, and Cliff, travelling with Ted and two civilians, asks Negative Man to check if the bridge will hold. Ted goes bleh with his head and tells Cliff the bridge will be fine. Cliff assures the old man and his daughter in the back that they're here to rescue them because we're the Doom Patrol. Suicide missions are our specialty. Suddenly, the bridge collapses, engulfing the Humvee, and Ted rescues the man and girl, and who says, the man says, but I don't understand. You said the bridge would hold. And Ted confesses he can see into the future, but only for 60 seconds.
Oh.
Cliff hears this and says, 60 seconds? Now you tell me. And Cliff has rescued some of the others. And then a military helicopter arrives on the scene, and Ava's on board, and her tendrils come down and pull everyone to safety. And then safe in the helicopter, the pilot tells them the others are waiting at the airport, and they have everybody. Then there's another press conference to detail the rescue and promote the team. But this time, Cliff is absent. As Jost, that's what you have to say, details the team's actions in Sarkhan, we see in flashback Cliff watching the non-US embassy personnel on the ground in the typhoon who aren't being rescued. So all the Americans are on the helicopter, everyone else is on the ground, and they're reaching up, imploring as the helicopter flies away from them. Later, Ted is talking to Jost, and it's finally time for him to straighten things out about who is the actual leader. And Ted is angry, but Jost explains, you can't deny that Cliff's had more experience, and the others have really taken to him. So, yes, I have to say it's him. Him and nobody else. And they open the doors, and there's Cliff, and he says, I quit.
Oh, whoops.
Yeah. Cliff explains he can't take money and be told who he can and can't rescue. I'll give you back your money, whatever I haven't spent. Jost says, to hell with the money. Cliff says it's not personal and he walks out. Ted, to his credit, waits a whole panel before smugly reaching out to shake Joss' hands. Meet the new leader, same as the old leader. And he goes on to tell the good news that he's now the team captain again. And he finds them all sullenly sitting with Cliff. Oh, no. The rest of the team have decided to quit too. Even Ava is breaking her silence. They said, a real man stands up for his principles. Surprisingly, Cliff is talking about them staying together as a team and just not working for Thayer Jost. And he pushes Ted's buttons by mentioning Ted's allegiance to Jost, but gets Ted's riled with memories of his demotion. He says, all right, I'll go with you, but I mean this, enough with that Negative Man talk. As we see the team leaving outside with their luggage, an aide says he's sorry to Thayer Jost, but Jost is unconcerned and he browses the Doom Patrol online store. He's lived through crises of resignation, stock crashes and more, and Jost Enterprises always comes back stronger than ever. He holds his head high, optimistic and serene. He said, why should I worry? And that's the end. So a lot of action in this.
Yes,
one. They go on two missions in one comic. Yeah,
getting his money's worth.
Two different countries, two different press conferences, and Cliff basically doesn't like being a company guy and, you know, only rescuing Americans. He wants to help everybody, not just the people he's told to. So I was surprised because I thought Cliff was actually going to quit, but instead when the team quit with him, he's talking about keeping the team together. So, you know, that's not what I expected when that happened.
I think that's one of the things I love about Cliff. He just wants to do the right thing, even though he's still somewhat miserable about the condition that he's in and where his life has gone and what's happened with his former teammates. He just wants to do the right thing. And that's what I love about the guy. You know, he wants to fight the good fight and be there for everyone and not just be, you know, making money off, you know, saving a select few. So yeah, Cliff's a man. He's the best. He's awesome.
And this ties into the cover, which shows sort of the Doom Patrol all in a helicopter and all these civilians who don't look American all trying to get into the helicopter, and, you know, Cliff has actually three kids hanging from one arm.
Yeah.
In the future. Yeah. It does look like people are desperate.
But again, it's great art all round from Tan and Huat, the cover and inside as well. And I do love the scene where they're on the low bridge during the typhoon, and, you know, the civilians that they've got in the truck with Cliff and Ted, and, you know, Cliff turns around and says, you know, suicide squads are our specialty. Cliff looks really creepy in that picture. He's got this bizarre grin on his face and his one eye's glowing, you know, in a really odd way, and It's kind of, he's trying to be comforting, but he's a bit creepy looking there, which is, I love that panel in that issue. It's great.
Yeah. And I mean, he's doing a lot of heavy lifting, Tanner Hewitt, with the art, because he's got to draw, you know, soldiers in the jungle fighting, but then he has to draw people sitting around a table and arguing, and you know, he does it all pretty well.
Yeah. It's great stuff. I think it's a great opening to the new run, these first two issues. They're just a lot of fun, and I guess in a way I appreciate the fact that it's sort of more straight up superheroics after what occurs with Morrison and then Pollack's run, if that makes sense, because Morrison and Pollack got into some really weird deep stuff, and we're only sort of I guess at the halfway point with Morrison stuff in particular. We haven't even gone near Pollack yet. So this is kind of more like, hey, let's be superheroes and go save the day and fight the good fight. And that's pretty much their standard thing. And that's, I found that a welcome return, so to say. Not to discount anything that Pollack or Morrison did, because a lot of that's really cool stuff too. It's just really weird, different stuff. So I think, if you like the superheroic straight up, people will probably enjoy this a bit more than what came before.
And I kind of like the dynamic of the new team. I mean, even though Cliff Steele is the only tie to the original Doom Patrol, I kind of take to the new characters pretty well. Like, you've got, you know, Shailene is so, you know, bubbly and optimistic, and, yeah, you know, she's the one who wants to help everybody. Mm-hmm. You've got Vic, who, you know, looks the Seattle just wants, you know, yeah, but he's, you know, quiet, and, you know, he likes to treat people right, even if he's not going to, you know, do it with lots of words. And then you got Ava. You don't know much about her. I mean, she has these creepy black tendrils, I think, that just come out, and, you know, they seem far stronger than they ought to be. And
yeah. It's like almost reminds me a little bit of Venom from the Spider-Man comic books. How he could, you know, launch all tendrils and that out and sort of manipulate objects and pick things and people up. A bit similar to that. But yeah, I think she literally only has one line of dialogue in either issue, in this second one. And we know nothing else about her. So that's a cool mystery waiting to happen there.
Yeah. And Ted he's like a Guy Gardner, slightly less arrogant, but without any power to back it up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he is the difficult one in the team, and he's the complainer, and he's the one who's always, you know, has to have his say about why he's right about things.
Mm-hmm.
He's, you know, he's very confident in his power to look into the future till they discover that it's only for 60 seconds, which, you know, is just enough time to get out of a real tight spot.
But, yeah. It's handy, but it's slightly limited.
There is a comic out now called 4 Seconds, which is the same sort of thing, but a girl can only see 4 seconds into the future.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah.
Wow, okay. That's 60 seconds is a bonus.
Yeah, that's by Paul O'Connor, who's you know, a long box graveyard on Twitter.
Okay.
Yeah, and he won a competition with Mark Waid's Thrill Bent, and he published he had to do a really quick pitch, and that was his pitch. So
nice. Wow.
Yeah.
Congrats to him.
So you can read it for free at thrillbent.com. Cool. I don't know if it's .com. It could be .org. I don't know.
Thrillbent.something. Yeah. People will find it. They can Google it. Yeah.
Anyway. So, final thoughts, Mike.
Really enjoyed both these. I think it's a great start to the new run for the Doom Patrol of this era. I think it's a great team. As you said, yeah, the characters are all interesting and likable. Cliff is Cliff. You know, he's great fun. And it's an interesting setup with the quote-unquote Doom Patrol being run by a businessman who's clearly out to make a buck off the name.
Yeah, but he seems to be really wanting to be nice and make everyone think he's a top bloke so at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you don't get that sort of Maxwell Lord smarminess from him. You get, you know, like, he wants to be seen as a, you know, a upright citizen and, you know, doing good. But Yeah. He is a very successful businessman, and we don't really trust him, do we?
No, maybe not. No.
So that's doomsplaining done, I think.
We done good.
So now it's time for the mailbag of doom. And we did get an interesting communication from Dr. Ange, who went to the Boston Comic Con last weekend. And Eric Larson, who was the artist on Doom Patrol, was there as a guest. And so Dr. Ange writes, I was at Boston Comic Con today and Eric Larson was a guest. I got a bunch of Doom Patrol books signed by him and told him how wild I thought the art was by him. A couple of small nuggets, which I found interesting. Number one, he decided to make the cover of Doom Patrol 13 an homage to the JLA cover, so the Justice League issue 5. That's with Negative Woman being held back by...
Yes.
And that's the same as Guy who's trying to hit... So that's, yeah, that's a cool. Classic JLA... Oh, Justice League cover, let's not call it JLA. And he said this was not a request by editorial, he just did it. So go Eric Larson.
Mm.
And the other thing he said was he decided to have issue 14 be horizontal. That's where the Power Girl and they'll go into that mystical realm with all the...
Yes, when they're fighting fighting that chaos demon lady. Yeah, her.
That woman. Zool. Anyway, that was not in Kupperberg's script or an editorial decision. He just thought it would work. So, two interesting little facts. Thank you, Dr. Ange.
Yeah. We also got an email from a friend of the show, Kevin, who is at Ostrakaswan on the Twitters. He says, hey guys, I started my day off catching up on episodes 65 and 66 and wanted to drop you a note. First off, one of you asked in 65 how much people knew about the original Patrol during Grant's run. As someone who was buying that run and the earlier Kupperberg issues, I had never read any other Doom Patrol stories. I knew the team mainly from their New Teen Titans connection and from studying Who's Who like a textbook. On the occasion, I would see a Silver Age issue. They were outside of my price range at the time. And other than that DC Digest, were any Silver Age stories reprinted until the Archive editions came out?
I don't think so.
No. I think the Archives would have been the first reprint of those stories. Kevin continues, that leads me into your review of issue 114. I haven't revisited the Silver Age stories in quite a while, but Kor's devolving ray made me think of the similar device Madame Rouge and General Zal used against the Titans, Robot Man and Mento in those New Teen Titans issues. I wonder if Marv Wolfman did that purposely as an homage, especially considering the characters involved. It wouldn't surprise me if he did.
Hmm.
Kevin says, I missed the family of the week question, but as for Mike's love of Seventh Heaven and his story about meeting Catherine Hicks, well, don't forget that Stephen Collins, the dad on Seventh Heaven, played Decker in Star Trek The Motion Picture. Yeah, I knew Kevin, but thanks. I always wondered if both of them were cast to try and bring in Trekkies or if that was just a weird coincidence. I'll say weird coincidence. Finally, here's my answer to the newest question of the week. Which we asked was, what's your favorite comic book accessory? And Kevin says, my favorite is Monsieur Mallard's beret. It really sets him apart. Did Solovar or Grodd, or any other inhabitant of Gorilla City don a cap in the Flash? Nope. Did Titano wear anything so fashionable while slugging it out with Superman? Nope. Not even the albino gorilla version of the Ultra Humanite bothered to look so dapper in his evil doing. So definitely it's Mallard's beret. Good call. Finally, Mike, I think you and all the listeners need to throw a little shade Paul's way for going on the Secret Origins podcast to discuss Hawk and Dove and not even bothering to mention Hawk's involvement with the Doom Patrol when they were talking about the character's history. Tisk tisk.
Oh, I knew about it, but we were a little pressed for time on that episode. So.
Tis, Mr. Hicks. Anyway, I'm looking forward to the Arcudi run. I skipped it when it was originally published, but bought the run on eBay about 2 years ago and really loved it. Cheers, Kevin. Thanks, yep. Kevin.
Yay.
Hooray.
All right, so let's get into our answers from other people. So, Karthik Karkarella on Twitter, Hero World Word Elder, said large shoulder pads, various 90s Marvel characters, of course, various DC characters, Judge Dredd. And then he said, I hope you like how I tried to my best to bury my initial character reason at the end there. So very subtle, Karthik.
Yeah, well done. Very, very subtle. Well done. Well done, Karthik. Nikki at 100_beasts on Twitter said, Cliff's leather jacket, obviously. Oh, and love gloves, gloves. And Superman's hair, if that counts.
Totally, whatever you reckon.
That's a winning combo, those three. Yeah.
Nikki's a bit of a Doom Patrol fan and a recent follower of our site and stuff.
Thanks for joining us, Nikki.
Yay. We heard from Between the Pages at Between the Pages blog. And that person said, can't decide between the Legion Flight Ring or Jimmy Olsen's Superman Signal Watch.
Hmm.
I'd go Flight Ring.
Yeah. I think the Signal Watch would be pretty cool, but that's just me. Moby One at Shmoby One said Barry Allen's costume ring that would shoot out his Flash costume.
That'd sweet. Be handy. Mm. Yeah, I want to keep other stuff in there.
Yes, sure.
Anyway, alias Saul Bishop at Saul Bishop said Scott Summers' ruby quartz glasses. Sweet.
Mm.
And Nick Darrington has a pair of them.
Really? God, he's full of surprises, that Darrington fellow.
Yeah, maybe, he's unstoppable.
Yeah, maybe he'll surprise us and come on the show one day. Rifty, friend of the show, silent partner, awesome friend, at Rift1821 said Green Lantern Ring, which thank God someone said that, because that's my answer too. And that's like, it's a Green Lantern Ring. You just think of something with your willpower and the ring creates it. Although depending on my mood on certain days, I don't know if I'd be worthy of a Green Lantern ring. Maybe a Red Lantern ring.
Oh, I could certainly use a Green Lantern ring around the farm. There'd be tons of stuff I could do.
Would be handy, yeah.
Would be handy. Mm.
Anyway.
Mm. We heard from Sergeant America at Sergeant America, and he said, as a historical flair, Batman's utility belt. Nice.
Nice.
Yeah, nice. Sweet. Hold your pants up too.
That's always handy when fighting crime. Yeah, yeah. Oh, look, it's Aaron Long at Juice005. And he said, the book that Havoc is holding on page 4 of X-Factor 82.
Yeah. I'm not even... No one's going to look that up.
No.
We don't...
I didn't. No. It's probably something rude.
I've got X-Factor set 87, actually. Anyway, we heard from Ferocious Fractures at Fractures, and he said 90 Cyclops pouches. What did he keep in them? No one knows, but they looked cool, I think.
Look, it's Fractures again. And he said Azrael's flaming sword gloves. They were cool.
Plus great for a quick barbecue.
True.
They're like hot hands, anyway. Mm. Ghost Rider's flaming chains, because they look cool. He's still going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What else was there? Look, another one from Fract. Spawn's right boot. It was huge and had spikes and made no sense at all, but looked cool.
And he said, also, Spawn's thigh pouches. What did he have in them? What was in them? Who cares? They look cool.
Oh, look, it's Fract again. And he said, Cliff's spider body. So when Robot Man's body got changed during the space war and he had spider legs attached, it was the best and looked cool. Don't deny it. I do like that one. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. Is he trying to make up for missing questions of the week over there?
Possibly, yes. Frack has gone through a period where he's promised to write in for previous questions of the week and we haven't heard anything. So I think he's making up for it now. Yeah.
Yeah. He said, Hellboy's right hand of doom. It's huge and it's cool. It's so cool. It's an arm with its own name.
Look, it's Frack again. He said, Ripclaw's claws. They were fingers that became huge knives shaped like claws. No one knew how, but they looked cool.
Another one, Cliff's arms and legs. They're detachable and you can hit people with them, which is cool.
Look, another one from Frack. Rebus's shades. How did they stay on? He has no ears. Who cares? They looked cool.
And again from... Oh, no, it's not Frack. It's Virginia Gentle Nerd at VA Gentle Nerd. You know this young lady, don't you?
Yes, yes. This is Allison, dear friend of ours, who I do the Gone to Texas podcast with as well. So.
The Preacher podcast? Gone yes. to Texas? That one?
That one, about the Preacher comic book and the Preacher TV show. So,
She said, Black Canary's old shoulder pads.
Is that'd that, be cool. Yeah.
The Justice League day.
A lot of love for... I'm sensing a lot of love for the older fashions in comics.
Yeah.
Which is cool. Relatively Geeky, at relatively underscore geek, said... That's
Professor Allen.
Oh, okay. Of course. Now I recognize it. Well, Professor Allen said, Wonder Woman's lasso, followed closely by her bracelets. Truth is a powerful weapon, almost as good as stopping bullets. Nice.
So someone said they could guess Martin Gray's answer, and he said, sorta, the best gadget is the flight ring, fashionable, functionable. So, and he showed a picture of Brainiac 5 wearing his flight ring.
And doing a slightly weird hand gesture.
Slightly, yeah.
Mark Sweeney also joined in on the conversation. He was at Mark Sweeney Jr. and said, let me take a stab at saying the Legion flight belt.
Yeah. Yes. And then Martin Gray came back, so he's trying to do a little bit of a frack thing. And he said, tiara, bracelets, lasso, plane. Diana has better accessories than Batman, and the Doom Patrol only has the action chair.
Ooh. That's a bit low. And we heard from Ange at Dr. Ange 70, and he said he's got to go with the Legion flight ring, but if he had to pick a second, he'd go with the magic lasso, and third, the Supermobile. And that's Superman's jet with the punching arms, isn't it?
That's the one, yeah.
Right, yep.
Yeah. Because okay. Superman needs a rocket with fists.
Yeah, just in case.
It's like Spider-Man needs a dune buggy. That's it all makes sense in comics.
Yeah.
Then we heard from Keith Bowden, who's at PluPerfectNemo, and he put up a picture of him with a Legion flight ring on.
Nice.
Making a fist at us with a cheeky grin on his face, aren't they?
Yeah. Nicely done, Keith. Nicely done.
So, Mike, what accessory do you think you'd need?
Green Lantern ring. Or if I was in a bad mood, Red Lantern ring. But I think the rings of the lanterns are just fantastic, and you know they rely on your thought and your creativity and yes, a certain emotion as well, depending on which ring you have. But I think I've ever since I was young, this is the idea that you think of it and the ring creates it. It's just so cool. Yeah.
I sort of have to go with you there. I mean the number of times I could use a Green Lantern ring on the farm. But I want it to be like one of those Green Lantern rings from the 80s and 90s where you just wore it and you could do whatever you want. Not like today it's all, you've got to have the willpower and only certain people have the willpower and all
that.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of that. I think the Green Lantern rings is a powerful tool for any powerful tool. So, I mean, I've been on the farm and they've said, you need to replace your septic system. You've got to dig 90, meters worth of trench. Ooh. And that'll cost you, you can do that and it'll cost you $50 a meter. With a Legion, with a Green Lantern ring, you could just do it.
Yeah,
you could trim the hedges. You could fix the fences.
Yeah.
You could dig a great big hole. You could straighten up a water tank that's fallen over. You could do all these things.
You could fly in and out of town as quick as you like,
Yeah. And you could fight crime if you really wanted to.
If you really wanted to, if there was crime near your farm or elsewhere.
Yeah. Or you could just fight people who have different coloured rings.
That's right. That tends to happen a fair bit these days. So, yeah.
See a lady in the street with a gold ring, you could just have it out.
Take that, you gold ring wearing lady.
Well said.
Yes.
Well said.
Anyway, Paul, what's our question for next week?
Okay, next week we're going to ask everybody, who's your favourite made-up spy person?
Ooh.
So you can't say Snowden, you can't say real spy, you've got to say made-up spy.
Made-up spy. From any medium, any genre?
Yeah, movies, comics, books, whatever you like.
What about cartoons?
Cartoons, yeah, sure.
Nice. Oh, I've got one.
Animations.
Animations, yes.
Mangas. Animes.
Yes. Oh, listen to you.
Yeah.
International pop culture expert.
Gazettes.
Yep, sure. And what issues of Doom Patrol will we be covering next week, Paul?
How do you know we're doing Doom Patrol? Well, you've got me. We will be coming back to look at Doom Patrol Volume 2, Issues 51 and 52, which is picking back up with the story with the Brotherhood of Dada.
Ooh.
So, interesting stuff to come there.
More magic bus shenanigans.
Yeah, love glove and all that.
Mm.
Anyway, if you want to get in touch with the show, there's several ways you can do it. You can contact us at WFDpod, which is Wilfred. You can send the email to waitingfordoom@gmail.com. There's Facebook, Waiting for Doom on Facebook. I think that's how it's found, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you can go to Doug's blog, where he will have a post about our show within a couple of days, and you can leave comments in the message facility on that. And that's at mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com. So we really appreciate the work Doug does on that to support us. Yeah, and his site is actually really excellent. He's been doing Doom Patrol posts for years and years and years, and every time I go there, it has recommended posts after the one you look at, and I quite often click on them, and you see amazing things like Cliff Chang drawing of the Doom Patrol.
Oh,
I saw that today.
Nice.
It's gorgeous. Hunt that one down.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's got a giant Elastigirl walking through the city with Negative Man flying behind her and Cliff on top of a building. Fantastic.
Oh, I love his art.
Yeah,
you're right. It's funny to me that I used to follow Doug's blog. God, that's hard to say. Years before we even started doing this show, and now you know he's a top bloke and a great mate, and he's a friend. Isn't it great how comics bring everyone together, especially Doom Patrol comics, because they're the best.
Yeah.
All right, I think we better sign up there because I'm getting a bit silly and it's past my bedtime.
Okay. All right. So we'll see you all next time on Waiting for Doom. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Catch you next time.